And good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink, who's running a little bit late.
Of course.
She'll be here. She forgot her headphones. And why do we need headphones today? Because our guests are on the phone. Hi, Brian, are you there?
I am here.
And Dustin, you there?
I'm here.
Great. Let me just introduce you. Dustin Brookshire wrote the book To the One Who Raped Me. In 2006, Dustin was raped by a former boyfriend, and in the months that followed, he began writing as a way to cope with the psychological aftermath, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Dustin's going to read a little bit of his poetry. Brian Borland is the publisher at Sibling Rivalry Press. Sibling Rivalry is based in Alexander, Arkansas, because Arkansas is where you go when you're thinking gay poetry. Right, Brian?
That's exactly right.
I thought so. I want to start with that. Where did you come up with the idea of doing a publisher that specializes in gay poetry in Arkansas?
Well, it was sort of accidental. I had been published in a journal called Ganymede that was based in New York. And the guy that ran the journal, John Staley, he sort of convinced me to self-publish my own book. And it was sort of Machiavellian. He wanted me to hire him to edit the book and put it together. And so at first I didn't really want to do that. I have a little bit of an ego, I guess, as writers tend to have. And I thought that a major publishing company would swoop in and pick me up and I'd get a book put out. But the poems that I had written were really... the poems of my youth, and they were about coming out and dealing with my sexuality and dealing with southern culture and how those things intersected. And so John talked me into hiring him, and we put out the book, launched it at a book fair in New York called the Rainbow Book Fair, and it sold really well and sort of took off. And that was where I thought it was going to end. I thought, you know, it would sort of launch me as a poet with a book, which at that time was really my goal. But then John unexpectedly died. And because I was the last one to work with him, people who were scheduled to be in upcoming issues of the journal started to contact me and asked me if I knew what would happen to their work. He'd accepted work for subsequent issues, and a lot of the people who were scheduled to appear in Ganymede were very excited, the same as I was when he initially chose my work to publish. And I felt a responsibility to go ahead and get their work out there. I also felt a responsibility to my friend John, who had changed my life by helping me put the book out. And so I decided to publish a tribute issue of his journal. We called it Ganymede Unfinished, and I went through every issue of the journal that he had published, contacted every poet and writer who had been featured in it, and solicited work from them. And they sent me their work through a trial by fire. I sort of learned how to emulate what John had done, put out Ganymede Unfinished, and used the proceeds to pay for a memorial service for John. And so we had that in New York, went to New York, and while I was there at the memorial service, an author named Ocean Vong approached me. He was somebody else that John had published in Ganymede, and wanted me to publish a book of his that featured his solo work. And I thought about it, and I had learned how to publish from putting Ganymede Unfinished together. Went ahead and published Ocean, and in the meantime, people were contacting me, wanting me to continue what John had started with the journal Ganymede. I knew for legal reasons, I didn't know what John's family would, who was not in the picture at this time, if they would ever come after me for using that name or using something that he had sort of created in a business venture of my own. But so I came up with the idea to publish a separate poetry journal. We called it Asarakis, And the reason we called it Assaracus was because in Greek mythology, Ganymede was a boy who was taken by Zeus's eagle and ended up serving at Zeus's feet. Assaracus, or the actual pronunciation is Asteracus, mm-hmm. But I wanted to put the emphasis on the first syllable for all kinds of reasons. But so call it Assaracus. It was the only journal of gay poetry that was in print in the world, still is, that's exclusive to gay poetry. So we had the journal Assaracus, we had the book of poetry by Ocean, we had my book, and suddenly I had this publishing company, and it just, I guess, being in the right place at the right time, and sort of took off. And
you did come in right at the right time, because do you know since then there have been no gay poetry publishers open in Arkansas?
That's correct.
I thought it was a mecca.
Lots of competition here. Yeah.
You know, does it really matter where you're located anymore?
It does. It piques people's interest. And you know,
it piqued ours. I mean, how many New York publishers have we had on? None.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. you got your publishers in New York, you got your publishers in California, mm-hmm. but most of the writers are from places in between those points, mm-hmm. and they're easy to overlook. And what I think that SRP has done is been able to pull writers from the middle of the country and all over the world and showcase them. But you know, it's inexpensive to run a business from Arkansas,
right.
And you know, we're just a phone call away from anywhere, a plane ride away from anywhere, so it worked.
So are you open to publishing any other type of gay literature outside of just gay poetry?
Absolutely. You know, we've published 27 full-length books of poetry, and not all of our authors identify as LGBT. We've published straight authors. We have novels and a journal of gay fiction called Jonathan, and digital singles that feature short stories. And again, not all of our authors identify as LGBT. We don't vet our authors on their sexuality. They've come to us. And of course, what's gotten attention for us has been our LGBT authors. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in sort of boxing yourself in with a label only enough to climb up and bust through the top of that box so you'll get noticed by mainstream. And that's what we've done. So we publish quality LGBT literature.
Caught our attention.
Yeah, and
so inclusive too.
Yeah,
straight authors.
Absolutely across the board.
Now, one of your authors is here. Dustin, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, tell us a little bit your story, first of all. Tell us what happened to you.
In 2006, I had a breakup with an ex, and it was on a visit that he came to collect something, and that led to the rape. I never really go into detail mm-hmm. about the specific experience. Something I always encourage people who have experienced it, that they control that conversation and know their trigger points. So I never talk about really the details of what happened, but that sort of happened. And then I had to find a way to deal with it. And I wasn't comfortable talking to anyone at that point. And I had always been a poet. And so I don't know why it didn't hit me right away, but it took a while for me to realize, oh, maybe I should put a pen to paper and write about what happened. And I just started writing and came up with this collection of poems.
And how did you find Brian?
Brian and I met online somehow, I think through blogging, and then at Saints and Sinners Literary Festival. We were at the same one where we discussed this book over some delicious voodoo beverages or something. I can't remember.
We're going to have you read a couple of your poems, and then we're going to talk a little bit about more about not the specifics of what happened to you, but we're going to go into the topic a little bit.
We can talk about the topic. Yeah,
yeah, we'll talk about the topic a little bit. So, do you have those two poems that we talked about?
I do.
Good. Why don't you read them?
Okay. In the movies, she rejects him with a laugh. I cringe. She strides to the bathroom, doesn't notice his eyes locked, fist pressed into the bar. I cringe. Her girlfriend asks, "You'll catch a cab?" He overhears, "Yes." I cringe. He sees tequila shots keeping her company. He licks the right upper corner of his lip. I cringe. He follows her out. She almost falls. The taxi pulls up. His hand grips her elbow. I whisper, "Run, girl, run. You'll never be the same again."
And the name of that poem was?
In the Movies.
In the Movies. Okay. And do you want to read the other one? Let's go right into that other poem, too.
Okay. It's titled, "I Don't Like to Say the Word Rape." Mm-hmm. When I say the word rape, I think of Jodie Foster in The Accused. I envision Jodie on the stand, telling the jury she knew who was inside, the defendant interrupting, to ask how she knew if her eyes were covered. Jodie replies, "Because they were chanting his name." But that isn't how it happened. There was no silence. Him coming inside.
Nice. It's powerful.
That's very poignant.
First of all, where do you live?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, so you're in a big city. Were you able to report the rape?
I did not.
You didn't? Okay.
It was something I went into that. It's almost like you see that Lifetime movie where the person goes and calls themselves in a shower and huddles up. For me, that was really pretty much how it was. I didn't want to tell anyone. I was so embarrassed. How could I let this happen? Put all the blame on myself. It was just something that I couldn't do.
Well, you know, it's very, very difficult for a lot of women to do that. It's one of the most underreported crimes in the United States. It's very difficult to tell anyone, much less, mm-hmm. Kind of cold, clinical, authorities, mm-hmm. I guess.
So has your ex done this to anybody else that you know of? And that's one of the reasons to report, is to stop somebody from doing this again.
I do not know. I know that he moved, and that's all she wrote.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't spoken with him since...
No.
Okay.
Wow. Well, one of the reasons why we don't have to talk about specifics of your incident, but I think this subject is not talked about enough in the gay community, particularly with men. Like I was talking to David before the show, and I think that when it comes to rape or any type of domestic violence, this is where the gender roles reverse. Women will always get attention, or not attention, will get... Yeah, I guess the attention from the legal system that they need if they indeed report it. Whereas if a man reports it, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes people don't believe him.
I think in a lot of cases, they're not going to even believe that it happened.
It's like, a man can defend himself or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I've even had very educated friends that, after I started reading these poems, became more comfortable talking about it and was put in situations to talk about it. And I've even had friends I would never even think would say it to me, and I had someone want to say, "So you said no," and I was like, "That's the whole point of using the word rape." Like it becomes different when it's man on man, and it can even be more uncomfortable mm-hmm. for people, and it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe there's a real stigma that's there, and how to overcome that is very difficult. I mean, women are still dealing with that, and I think in domestic violence situations, gay people are particularly disadvantaged when it comes to understanding, and particularly from law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are people want to impose their preconceived notions about, what must have happened, what must happen now, all of those things I think are erroneous.
All right. Absolutely.
Was there domestic violence when you were with him?
There was not. There were signs that I wish I had picked up on, but I guess because I was in love, just being very possessive and jealous, mm-hmm. That, years later, as I sat back and thought about it, I'm like, wow, I really should have realized that if any one of my friends would have told me that their boyfriend was this possessive, that I'd be like, wow, you need to get away. This person's a little creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no physical violence before this, no.
Do you have any poems that you've directed toward the man who raped you?
There is one, the title poem of the chapbook.
Oh, okay.
Is to him.
Why don't we hold that one for a little bit later, and we'll open up one of the segments with that one. what, having gone through this and having written about it, to work your way through the situation, first of all, do you feel like you've worked your way through it?
It was this and then therapy. I ended up going to therapy, and that's really what helped.
Well, good for you.
To my place, was seeing a therapist.
You know, and I'm not saying, well, it's something that you forget about, but it's something that you've moved beyond then.
It becomes easier with time. It's something to always carry.
Sure.
But I don't have the same hurt that I did years ago.
When you've talked to other people, or when the book came out, did you start hearing from other male rape victims?
I have. I hear from male and female. The first time I ever read some poems from this chapbook at a reading, I had a woman come up to me after the reading and tell me thank you for letting her know that she wasn't alone.
Mm.
And I knew at that point that I would always have to read these poems, because I almost didn't read them. I was sick to my stomach because there were people in the audience that knew me that didn't know this about me.
Mm.
And I knew then that I needed to continue with these poems because it did help other people. Before the chapbook came out, I had people message me on Facebook that I didn't know, telling me their stories, and it was sort of hard to hear to hear some of these stories from people, but I wanted to listen because I think it's important to have somebody to listen to. I had a best friend that I was able to speak with and confide in, and that was my first person. And I don't know what would have happened to me if I wouldn't have had that one person that I could have went to, because that's what changed the game for me, to get in my comfortable space, to then move to finding a therapist to talk to it about.
We're talking to Dustin Brookshire, who wrote the book To the One Who Raped Me, and Brian Borland, his publisher at Sibling Rivalry Press. They specialize in gay and lesbian poetry. They do other things, too. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more. Dustin will start off the next segment with that poem. We need to take a short break. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
The Dallas Volunteer Attorney Program, a joint initiative of the Dallas Bar Association and Legal Aid of Northwest Texas. It is an organization dedicated to increasing and enhancing pro bono legal services to the poor in Dallas through the recruitment, training, and support of volunteer attorneys. DVAP offers numerous legal clinics for Dallas County residents. For more information, dallasbar.org/DVAP.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to the Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. Yes, Patty, I did get your popping that soda can on the air.
Oh, great.
She did it right in front of the microphone. Our guests today are Brian Borland, he's the publisher of Sibling Rivalry Press, Dustin Brookshire, who wrote the book To the One Who Raped Me. Dustin, why don't we start with the title poem?
Okay. To the One Who Raped Me. I cringe now when there's a rape scene in a movie. My stomach cramps like a bully has hit me. I turn cold. Beads of sweat form a crown of shame across my forehead. I want your mother to know, to question where she went wrong. I want you to stare into her eyes as she asks you. Feel her pain. I often think of ways you could die. Car wreck, allergic reaction, a robbery. My therapist says it's normal to have these thoughts, to want you to die, but important to admit your suffering won't bring me happiness. What I want is impossible, to erase the moment after when you looked at me and smiled.
No, that's just real powerful.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get to send him at least a copy of the book?
I did not, but that's the whole reason why I did title it the one that I did.
Yeah.
I wanted this to be my FU, that if you ever saw this book, he would know, seeing my name under it, this is for you.
Do you think he thought of it as rape?
I honestly don't.
You don't.
When I think back on how possessive he was, I think that he thought I still belonged to him.
Yeah.
And that's just what it was.
But that's what the deal is with rape. It's about control and power.
It is.
And he was exerting both upon you to tell you that, sure. that, hey, you're mine. You're still mine. And mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that to me is the essence of rape.
Yeah. Brian, let's bring you into this. When you got these poems, what did you think?
Well, they fit right into what I wanted to do with the press. Part of our mission is to publish work that disturbs and enraptures, and that quote is taken from one of my favorite poets, Adrienne Rich. But, you know, what that means to me is giving voice to the voiceless. What poetry has always done for me, and what it did for me growing up in a small town in Arkansas, it gave me, you know, hope that I wasn't the only one who felt a certain way, who was coming to terms with sexuality or any number of things. And when Dustin, you know, told me his story and told me he was writing his poems, I immediately thought, you know, this is something that needs to be published. And I didn't know that anybody else would publish it. You know, it's a very provocative title. Some of the poems, most of the poems are uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and they challenge you. They challenge how we define rape and the parties involved and how we respond to such things. And immediately I knew, you know, this is something that we needed to champion and put out there. And I'm glad that we did.
Dustin, we have a question from one of our listeners, and he wants to know, had you already come out prior to the rape, and was your family supportive?
I was out. I actually did not tell my family until the book was going to come out, because I didn't want them to see a copy of it. I grew up in North Georgia country, kind of you be a man's man kind of thing, and I was just worried how my parents would take it, and I just couldn't face disappointment for my parents, even knowing that there's nothing I should be disappointed or ashamed about, you know, at the point. But they actually, it amazes me to this day that my mother's comment to me, I will hold it near and dear to my heart for the rest of my life. She said, "So you were afraid to tell us because you were ashamed, even though you should have never been ashamed that this happened to you."
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And she's right. But she's from amazing. A woman's point of view, about rape, that's not really surprising. It shows the difference between male rape and female rape, I guess.
I mean, I think you're right, because I think most men, gay or straight, don't really even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility that could happen to them.
Sure, sure. One of the lines in the poem that I love is, "I want your mother to know."
Yeah, that was, you know,
it was powerful.
Because you felt this shame. You were ashamed or afraid to tell your family, but you want her to know. What would happen if she knew, do you think?
It's that anything that you go through when your offspring does something that's horrific, the embarrassment. I went through this whole period of not wanting to think these horrible thoughts about him, because I thought it was unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought of all these different ways. What would be so miserable for him? What could be the utter pain for him? And I thought, wow, you know, your parents knowing that you did something horrific.
Mm-hmm.
I never met her, so I'm but,
okay.
You know, I'm sure that she would be extremely disappointed, to put it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's something, too, that, you know, to look at the things that he would actually, or the people in his life that he actually respects, when he did something so incredibly disrespectful to a person he allegedly loved. I mean, it's hard for me to even think that there would be people in his life that he truly respected, because he's able to do this to you. But, you know, like, how could you, you must treat your mother terribly, or you must treat your father terribly, if you think you could do that to me. You know, I mean, it's a sad existence for him, no doubt. But if he does respect his mother, then that's, she would need to know. I think she should know. And hopefully she does. Maybe she's put it together.
You know, she would have had to have seen the book. She would have had to...
Brian, have you had any other submissions of not just poetry, but maybe even just biographies or real stories about domestic violence in the LGBT community?
You know, they turn up from time to time. I do see a lot of topics, difficult topics, in submissions to our poetry journal, Asarakis. And then it runs the gamut on the topics. When our community was dealing with the rash of youth suicide, I saw several poems on that topic. For example, one that sticks with me about Tyler Clementi, who was the young man at Rutgers who jumped off the George Washington Bridge after his college roommate they captured him on a webcam kissing another man. But I'm fortunate enough to be able to bring light to these topics and put them forward for discussion, and that's really what I'm most proud of with the press.
What other topics have you seen a lot? We were talking a little bit before the show that this is such a different topic for us because we've been talking so much gay marriage. You know, we have 15 states, 16 states, 17 states, 18 states. Oops, no, only 17 now. So we've been talking so much about that. Have you seen a lot about marriage and rights? And
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that comes through often. One topic that I've seen that's more recent is like the activities in Russia and other countries more recent that have enacted laws that are anti-gay. So I'm seeing poets take up those topics. You know, everything that affects our community, I think we've had at least a submission, if not something published about it. And that's one of the reasons I think poetry is important.
And it is. And Dustin, I want to get back to you. Why do you think it is that this is a particularly good art form for something like getting out feelings about rape or getting out feelings about different issues that are important?
It's just so cathartic. I've always been a writer, so I can't really say. It's just between you and the page, and I think sometimes that's what helps, is that if there's not a person there that can help you tell someone, you feel like you're telling someone because you're telling the page, and it's all about saying that it happened, admitting that it happened. Don't keep it in there. And I think that anyone who journals, writes poetry or short stories, just as long as they're writing that it happened so that they can let someone else know. Because I really firmly believe that the way to get on your road to healing is telling at least one person what happened to you. And I think that the start can come with telling the page.
Now, you both live in southern states, and, you know, we're not technically the South, I suppose, in Texas, but we get our flavor of it. Have you gotten any, and what kinds of backlash maybe you've experienced in where you live, you know, by having this business and
or by publishing a book,
publishing a book? Have you gotten any hate mail or anything like that?
Well, speaking on the publishing side of things, and no. It's actually been quite the opposite. A lot of our local press, has picked up what we've been doing and run stories on our books and our state paper, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I remember they did a feature. Asarakis was named by Library Journal as one of 2011's best new magazines, which was a pretty big deal, and I was very, very proud of that. And so, of course, at that point, they sort of had to run a story on us. And this is a publication that shies away from even using the word gay. And of course, they had to during that story, and got a lot of positive attention. It's been really great and really surprising. You know, growing up, I did not ever envision a future where I would be out or married, and I'm married and my husband runs the press with me, let alone if you Google my name, the word gay would come up in sparkling letters, which is what is what happens. I never envisioned that for myself.
Yeah, the three of us here, pretty much the same.
Same
thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I'm pleasantly surprised. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dustin, did you have any backlash?
I only had one instance. You know, I had one person tell me, because I have a tendency that I can be a little bitchy, and, you know, I have my...
Yeah, Patty, too.
Comrade.
And I have my, you know, my promiscuous side, but the fact of the matter is no means no, and someone told me that they saw this at their friend's house, and knowing me, they thought I was just wanting to be a victim, and I set him straight very quickly that you can do what you want in any bed that you want, but once you say no, that's the final word. So it didn't matter what he thought, that, and I don't owe him any other explanation than the fact that I said no and I don't appreciate what he was saying.
You know, in your title poem, one of the lines, one of the first lines was that you cringe now at any rape scene.
Yeah.
So you look at rape now completely differently than you did before.
Yes. There are a lot of poems in the chapbook that deal with TV and movies. That was what was the most difficult for me. When I would watch a movie and there would be the rape scene, I pretty much had a meltdown. I can't even remember what the first movie was that I watched with a rape scene, but I had a complete meltdown. And then I realized, you know, that is a trigger for me, and I have to be careful with dealing with that because it brings too much of the past back for me.
You know, there's a tradition in journalism that's kind of been a topic in among feminists and women's rights for a long time, and that's this idea that it's best and it's most respectful and it's the right thing to do in journalism to not publish the name of a person who's been raped. And there's a school of thought among you know, women's rights activists that's not an approach that's healthy. You know, that the victim's name should be placed out there. And not this blanket across the board, you know, kind of denial that she exists. And there's a lot of other issues involved with that too, in terms of like blaming the victim. How was she dressed? You know, well, you don't ask other victims of crime, how are you dressed?
Right.
You know, and
then
somehow makes a difference in whether you quote deserved it or not. And then there's this whole other school of thought that says no, a person must be respected. They've had an enormously personal violation, and you know, their name should be withheld and such. What is your take on that in your conversations, Dustin, with others who come to your readings and who have experienced your poems? And what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's a good idea to withhold a name? Or
I think it should be the individual's choice, whatever that person is comfortable with. If they're comfortable with their name being released, then I say release it. If they're not, I say withhold it. You know, there was the case in Kentucky of a young girl, Savannah Dietrich, who was raped and named her rapist on Twitter, and then she almost was held in contempt of court because they didn't want her rapist named because they were 17. It's this whole culture of we put too much responsibility on the victim and not the rapist. We need to look at the people who are doing it and not, you know, that you should have to worry about what you're wearing or worry that you have one too many drinks. It's that there should not be people out there that are going to do this to you. And how can we stop that from happening instead of making people hold back?
I want to go back to Brian in the publishing world. Every year, I don't know the name of the list, but David always brings it to my attention because I have a child, and that list is the books that are banned in America. And every year, that Penguin book, Entango Mix 3, it's a children's book, makes the list about this chick, this Penguin chick who has two dads. So I was wondering when, you know, you see you hadn't really received any backlash, but do you have any trouble getting books, I guess mainstream bookstores or libraries to carry some of the books that you've published?
You know, not really. I've only had one occurrence from Dustin's hometown, actually, though it was not his book, where a bookstore refused to carry one of our titles. But ironically, it wasn't because the author identified as LGBT. It was because the front of the book had her standing in a ring of fire, and the bookshop owner thought that it was devilish.
Oh,
so he refused to stock her book. That's you know, that we sort of got a kick out of that. But no, we've had a great great reception from bookstores and libraries. In fact, the university library that is the most supportive of us is Notre Dame, which is very,
really?
Very interesting. I have no idea what they stock all our books. They have they have a subscription to Assaracus, and I'm sure they'll carry our new journal.
Well, Notre Dame is a Catholic school, and the Catholic Church is very supportive of the gay community. You didn't know that?
I think there's just there's a hunger. There's a hunger for those books for whatever reason.
Well, you know something. At a place where something is banned or wrong or what, of course there's going to be more hunger for it there.
Yeah, true.
You know, those of us who grew up where this is okay, it's just who you are.
Yeah.
I didn't need to read a whole lot of books on it, whereas Patty, who, you know, who went to Baylor, who, you know, she's a recovering Baptist, and she read a lot of books before coming out.
You had to. Well, they say you can't have it, then, you know, that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, as a kid, I remember being in libraries and stealing books from the library that had anything to do with homosexuality. I remember I stole the Kinsey Report book. I used to load my backpack up, and I've told librarians this now, and you know they don't cringe. They're like, you know, if the book helps you, that's what it's there for. I hope somebody steals our books. That's what I hope for. If they need it, steal them.
That would be a great problem to have.
So for all of our listeners, well, it doesn't really count much in the Dallas area since we don't have bookstores here anymore, basically.
Right.
No, there's so few that are left here.
Buy your pixels, though.
Do you know, and we need to take another break, but do you know if your books are available at any bookstores here in Dallas? Because I guess there are a few.
Like Barnes & Noble. And
you know, I'm not sure. The Barnes & Noble stores, they're all individual, and if we generally, if we have authors in the community, they do carry them. Mm. I don't know that they're carried just, you know, nationally as a chain. We do have a few, but they can all be ordered from any bookstore, and they're always available on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, and our own website, siblingrivalrypress.com. And for your listeners, if they buy from our website, siblingrivalrypress.com, and enter code radio at checkout, we give them 20% off.
Nice.
There we go.
Nice.
Well, let's repeat that again before we...
We will, but we need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink. We're talking to Brian Borland. He's the publisher of Sibling Rivalry Press, and Dustin Brookshire, who is one of Brian's authors. He wrote the book, To the One Who Raped Me. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Sparky's Pals reminds you that your pets don't have cell phones, so make sure they can find their way home if they get lost. All pets should wear identifying tags and be microchipped. For more information, their website is www.sparkyspals.org. Their phone number is 214-823-7257.
This is Jason Wright from Dallas, and I listen to Lambda Week 89.3 K.
Excuse me.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. While David is choking up a little bit, I'm around Landis. Yeah, I mean, it's that time of year.
I just got my flu shot just last week.
But mine is just allergies. Just allergies.
We are talking to Brian Borland. He's the publisher of Sibling Rivalry Press, Dustin Brookshire, To the One Who Raped Me.
I have a question. Blurted it out during the break. Are your publications in... everything that you do, are they available like on a Kindle electronically?
Many of them are. As far as ebooks go, ebooks and poetry don't always work hand in hand because readers can change the text size of poems, and when you change the text size, it can change line breaks, and line breaks are so specific on poems.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, ebooks can turn poetry into sort of a mess, but we do have several that are available, and many of our titles are even available on PDF, and that protects the line breaks. So,
okay, yeah, anybody who knows me knows I think ebooks are evil.
That's why they start with a knee, right?
Uh-huh. Exactly. Brian, for a lot of other people who think they have something to write, whether it be poetry or just any type of writing, what kind of advice would you give them to maybe submit a book and have it published? Not just with you, with anyone.
Well, first of all, read publications from wherever you're submitting to. It's lots of times, and I'm a writer as well as a publisher, and I have an interest in getting my work published elsewhere as well. So always make yourself familiar with the submission guidelines and the type of material that other publishers, journals, magazines, type of stuff that they publish. Otherwise, you can be wasting your time. It may not even be anything near the types of stuff that they're publishing. That's number one. But number two, don't be afraid to put your work out there. Lots of times people will sit on a manuscript or anything that they've written and try to perfect it and perfect it and perfect it. And they try to wait for, you know, maybe like I wait for that big publisher to come along, the major publisher to come along. And then you're missing opportunities. You know, just get it out there. If you think somebody can benefit from it, if you want to tell your story, don't be afraid to send it out. I think those are two very important.
For a new author, you know, there's the breakthrough author who, you know, makes the New York Times bestseller list. That's not most books. In a way, aren't they better with a small publisher who's going to really care about their book as opposed to a large publisher that's going to pick maybe their top five books out of 2,000 books that they publish?
You know, it just totally depends on the publisher. I think our top sellers are the authors that treat their work like it's a career. Mm-hmm. You know, for some people, simply getting the work in print is the end of the story and it's enough for them, and that's fine. But if you really want to be successful as far as selling or getting attention for your work, you have to really put it out there and promote it yourself. You have to do readings. You have to constantly talk about it. You can't just let it, you can't just let it swim on its own. A book or a poem publication is like a child. You sort of have to teach it how to walk. And the most successful authors are the ones who do that.
And are you open to any type of topics, not just poetry, as far as
yes.
a publisher?
Yes. Our submission guidelines are on our website. Now, as far as poetry goes, our open submission period is every year from March to June. But for fiction, for nonfiction, for memoir, anything like that, we do have systems in place. We have a referral system, and if one of our authors refers you to us, then we will always bump you sort of to the head of the line and read you first. But, you know, my email address is on the website. If somebody sends me, you know, the Great American Novel, I'm certainly not going to turn it away.
Mm-hmm. And actually, one of your upcoming upcoming writers, possibly, I don't know that you've signed yet, is Josh, who normally runs our board.
Yeah, he's actually sent some material for consideration for our journal, and I can't wait to sit down and read it. Yeah. I'm a big fan of his work. He's sent some stuff before, and you know, he's quite a talent.
And Josh is sorry he couldn't be here today, but he is home with the flu and possibly pneumonia.
Oh yeah. No!
So get better soon, Josh. Yeah. We miss you.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dustin, when Brian said that. The most successful authors are the ones that treat this as a career. You've certainly used your book to get out this message. The book wasn't the end for you, was it?
No. I'm very vocal about what happened to me, and I always try to include at any reading I do at least one or two poems from this chapbook, because it's just,
sure.
I guess I grew up Patty Baptist as well, and you know how they always say, you never know who needs the message.
Right.
I take that approach. So I always try to include at least one poem or two from this chapbook anytime I do a reading, because you never know who is sitting in that audience that needs to know that they're not alone. And I've had people come up to me that I've known for years that have known this has happened. They've known for years, and then at some point have felt comfortable in telling me, you know what, it happened to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you just never know who needs to hear it.
It's at that level where people don't talk about rape, huh? I mean,
it
even
is.
When you know somebody else was raped and they're a friend of yours.
I think that's true. I mean, I've had a friend of mine in the past who's told me that she was raped, and she hadn't told anybody.
Hmm.
Anybody. she was ashamed. She was angry. She had all, you know, the gamut of feelings, but... Mm-hmm. To just even to begin to talk about it, it's like, where do you even start? where to even start unless you're willing to hear the whole thing.
All right.
And she just felt like nobody was willing to listen, which I think is really, really quite sad.
That is sad.
Because a lot of people, I think, are there for people. They just don't know that it's going on, and they can't help.
You know? I think part of that's because people don't. You're afraid of what questions will be asked, and you just want to be able to tell what happened to you and have someone listen and not ask, because while you're comfortable with talking about it, you may not be comfortable with people asking you questions. And I just think a lot of people need to learn to just listen. Just be the shoulder. Let them get it off their chest.
Yep. I don't know anyone who, as far as an LGBT person, as far as my circle of friends or friends of friends, I don't know anyone that has been raped. That doesn't mean it hadn't happened. I just don't know about it. But I definitely know of a few who've been in the middle or the receiving end of a domestic violence situation, and none of them, the ones that I know, none of them have ever reported it. And I just wonder if you could give your thoughts on maybe why that is.
I think it's with the same thing that HRC talks about, people's fear in healthcare, that once people know about it, that they'll be treated differently, that they also feel that same sort of thing towards the judicial system, the police officers, because it's same sex, that there'll be some different treatment that they will get if they worry that they're heterosexual. It's just, even though we've come such a long way, there's still that fear of how the past used to be. It comes back to haunt you.
And sometimes people aren't out when it occurs, you know.
True.
And they would have to out themselves, and they worry about how their family would react, not only to the rape itself, but just the simple fact of coming out as gay.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if they were raped within a same-sex rape, the person might not be gay, but you're going to assume he is because he was
raped
by somebody of the same sex. And it's not just family, but I can think of an even worse situation. You might be out to your family, out to friends, but you work for a company that is going to fire you if they find out that you're gay. And can you imagine what a horrible company that would be that fired you after you were raped?
But
I can imagine the fear.
I absolutely can believe it would happen, too. I mean, in 29 states, you can be fired simply
for
being gay.
Especially here in the South.
Mm-hmm. Or even someone thinking that you're gay, mm-hmm. you can be fired.
Dustin, did you have that fear, or were you not in that position at all?
My employer has, luckily, some very great discrimination policies on that. So that wasn't my worry. It was just anyone knowing. I didn't want anyone to know. It didn't. Uh-huh. It didn't matter who you were. I had that fear and shame of not wanting anyone to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, and you pile onto that, in that moment when you're making that decision, do I go to the police now? Do I go tomorrow? Do I go later? There's got to be that place, whether it's rape or other forms of domestic violence, that you just don't want it to get worse. And you've got to pull yourself in and kind of stabilize. And I think, especially being LGBT, on all of those counts, it's difficult to talk to strangers. It's difficult to, to subject yourself to a physical exam. And especially when you believe there might be homophobia coming back at you. I mean, why would you do that? I mean, you've just been through the most horrible experience of your life, and you want to say, let me go, invite this other abuse into my life. Why would I do that? And so I think that contributes a lot to those existing feelings that are already there as a result of the abuse.
Yeah, Dustin, earlier you said one of the things that helped you get to the point where you are now, you don't ever completely shake it, is that you went to therapy. So I just want to congratulate you, because a lot of people don't do that. How soon, or what got you to the point to you said to yourself, I need to go talk to somebody?
It was right around between, I think, the 6 months to year mark, and I still wasn't able to handle the emotions that I was having. Writing was helping me get it out. Talking to my best friend, he was amazing, but it just, nothing was changing, except I did feel more comfortable in being able to talk about what happened. And at that point, I would never even say that I was raped. I would say there was a sexual assault. Like, I couldn't, even when I was talking to my best friend, I would never use the word rape. And it wasn't until I got involved in therapy with my therapist that I could finally say I was raped.
Was that cathartic to be able to use that word?
It was. It was, yes. it was a very good moment.
So, Dustin, do you see more books coming? More collections? More poems?
I have a couple things that I'm working on that I'm looking for a publisher that don't really deal with the rape.
We know
I'm
one.
I'm hoping so. But there's always a rape poem. That's what I always crack that joke when I'm doing a reading, that every time I think that I've written everything I could write about it, something happens. And
Dustin, we know a publisher that we can put you together with. Brian, you there?
I'm here.
But you're saying you're looking for a publisher. Is this something that you don't think fits in with sibling rivalry?
I'm trying to also branch out and see what else is out there, uh-huh. too. Brian is excellent. I recommend anyone submit to him. They give you a lot of TLC. I've had people ask me about Brian through Facebook, and I'm like, you can't go wrong with Brian and his team.
Okay, so Brian, let's switch gears a little bit. We have a few minutes left. You and I were talking earlier in the week, and you had a couple of stories that we were going to talk about. And do I have my notes in front of me? Of course not. What were we talking about?
What were we talking about?
You don't remember either.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad you're as brain dead on a Sunday as I am. We just got moved back to this time slot. Patty, didn't you feel more comfortable on Saturday? You could still talk.
Yeah,
I know.
We messed up on Sunday.
Having trouble. Tell us a little bit more about your press and some of your other authors.
Well, sure. We've been really, really fortunate in what we've been able to accomplish in 3 years. We've got acclaim from Poets and Writers magazine. We had a top debut novel, Corona, by Bushra Ramin, which is about balancing immigrant culture with American culture. And that book has been very successful. We also had a Poets and Writers top 12 debut poetry book, Skin Shift, by Matthew Hittinger. One of our poems that we published in the journal Acerakis received a Pushcart Prize self-portrait with exit wounds from our first author, Ocean Vong. And Stephen S. Mills, he won a Lambda Literary Award for gay poetry for his book, He Do the Gay Man in Different Voices. And so that felt really, really good.
Yeah, and I saw that when I was looking at your website. I thought, at first I'm thinking, gay press in Arkansas, and then I'm thinking, oh, they've won awards. You know, the Lambda Literary Award really is a top national award.
Oh, absolutely.
And not a top gay literary award. It is a gay award, but it's a top award for somebody to win.
I just have a quick question.
That's impressive in just 3 years.
I know we just have a couple of minutes here, and we want to be sure that you get the information about how our listeners can tap into a discount. But really quickly, you know, we've had a lot of marriage talk lately with marriage equality briefly happening in Utah. Now it's been kicked back to the Tenth Circuit and probably will go on to the Supreme Court.
It will.
And then we're a super dumb estate. Texas is a super dumb estate. By super dumb, we mean not just marriage is banned, but any type of relationship recognition. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for both Georgia and Arkansas. What do you think about the prospects of bringing marriage equality to your states?
Well, I'm married. My husband, Seth, and I were married in Massachusetts. And
congratulations.
Thank you so much. We're excited. We think it's going to happen here. There's legal challenges in Arkansas right now, mm-hmm. and we think, you know, next year, next 2 years, I think Supreme Court will rule, and I think every state will have equality.
See, and we have a big divorce case going on here. We're just hoping we can get divorced here.
We're not worried about marriage. They don't want to recognize the divorce because they don't want to recognize the marriage.
Give us your website.
SiblingRivalryPress.com.
And if you put in radio, you'll get a 20% discount, even if you're listening to us on podcast.
Yes.
Awesome.
Good. Brian, I want to thank you very much. Brian Borland, he's the publisher at Sibling Rivalry Press. Dustin, thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Yeah, Dustin Brookshire, his book is To the One Who Raped Me. It's available on that website. And that brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Josh, get well. And we'll be back next week with more.